Oh my goodness. Welcome guys. Welcome to the podcast and welcome to the Developing Life community. It is our mission to connect with each and every one of you to help elevate your entrepreneurial journey with human-centered innovation and sustainable growth strategies. Happy Women's History Month. We are kicking off Women's History Month with an amazing guest, Annelie Hansen. She is a brand strategist based out of Stockholm, Sweden, with over 20 years of experience in brand strategy, design thinking. Her experience comes from working with a wide range of brands like Coca-Cola, Levi, Polaroid, John Deere. She also has the experience of being a chief brand officer and chief marketing officer at, you're going to have to help me pronounce this, Annelise, so I do not butcher this name.
Lantmännen, yeah, it's right.
Lantmännen, which is a multi-billion dollar company in Northern Europe, the leader in agriculture, machinery, bioenergy, and food products. Welcome to the show. I am so excited to hear what you have to say about enacting your strategy and actually putting it to work and putting it in motion. I have my notebook. I'm ready to go and jot down everything that you're going to share with us today. I hope everybody is ready and excited. And Heather, floor is yours.
Thanks, Drew. Welcome, Annalie. I am so thrilled to have you as our first guest kicking off Women's History Month. Our whole month is our women speakers, so we are really focused on female leadership. So happy to have you here, Annalie.
Oh, thank you so much, Heather Crank. I'm so honored to be here and to be your first guest. Yeah, amazing. Thank you.
So that was an incredible introduction, and I'd like to just jump right into the Q&A questions that we have for you. One thing I'd really like to focus on today is you work as a brand strategist. I know you're kind of straddling a lot of other areas at the same time, but one area that I think a lot of people get stuck in is the execution part of brand strategy. So I'd like to open this up with a couple questions around that. Is that okay?
Absolutely.
Okay. So my first question, and what I'm really curious about, are challenges that people experience in executing their brand strategy. Do you feel like strategic thinking is more important than creative thinking? And do you think they're equally important? And where do people get stuck between creative thinking, brand strategy, and execution?
Okay, it's a really big question. I could spend like 2 hours just talking about that. First of all, I want to say no, I don't think it's one is better than the other, of course. I mean, I think we're just it's two different roles, and sometimes a person can combine both of them and it works really well. So we have the strategic thinking, the brand strategy first, and then it's nothing. It's just a document if you don't do anything with it and if you don't execute. So, of course, it's extremely important that you do that. So, I think what the challenge here is when it's not the same people doing it. And it can be that, do you want to go into that kind of the problem with it? Is it okay if I kind of go
Yes,
into that?
please do.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, what happens, what I see is that when I've been working in big corporate environments, then everything is very much silos. It's like different departments work in different ways. Most people who work at the marketing department, which is actually, at least from my experience, the CMO almost always have the biggest budget. So if you think about it from that perspective, that there's a lot of marketing people with that background who works for the marketing department. So what often happens is that all the strategy is doing in those is happening in those meetings. And then way too late, you invite the creative people who will actually find the solution to the problem you defined. And when they're not part of the discussions from start, then it's already getting to become a problem before you almost get started. Mostly because of miscommunication. It could also be a lot about egos, you know? And so I think when I've been working in smaller companies or had my own studio, that I always invited the creative team from start, especially when I worked with the graphic designer and we did brand strategy. That person was with from day one, from the first meeting. That's how you go from a really good strategy into a really good execution. So the problem is when the creatives comes in way too late.
Oh, I love that. That's super smart. Super, super smart. It's also, as a creative person, really nice to be considered that way. It's beautiful when you bring everybody to the table. And I agree with you. I think you get way better solutions. If you could give two pieces of advice for somebody who, let's say they take you up on bringing the creative person in, two pieces of advice on steps to take in integrating the creative with the execution.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that it always start with the strategy first. But with that said, and this is why my big mission is to help creatives learn how to build brands. And when I say build brands, I don't want to call it brand strategy in a way, because for me, brand strategy is a combination of marketing and branding, and I even include design thinking. So building brands is the big plan, the big overall plan for how to grow the brand. So what's important, that is that you start from, for me at least, you start from the inside, because a vision, for example, is what will happen far away in the future, and you're not changing the vision. But the vision is not just important for creative people. It's extremely important for people who maybe want to work for a company, because you want to know where the company is heading. You want to be part of something bigger. So the mission and the vision is really important for people. It's also important for other stakeholders. So that's why it's important to start there and start with, like, what kind of responsibility do we want to take as a company? What difference do we want to make in the world? It's not just about making money. It's hopefully also about taking some responsibility and leave the world a little bit better. So we need to start there somewhere, because this also helps people who will execute on ideas, because now we have something that talks to people's heart. So here's the source, like, here's the secret sauce to all the stories. Almost. So it comes from the purpose story, comes from the founder story. We know why they do what they do, so we can really care about it. So we start there, and then we need to add on some personality and value, so we actually know who they are. And I always tell people, think about it a little bit like, you know, when we were younger, like teenagers, Heather, like exploring and trying different styles and showing up different ways, because we didn't really knew who we were, maybe, like, we didn't find ourselves yet. So we have to experiment a little bit. So if you don't know who you are, and then you go on a date, which is your date, is the customers. And the customer starts to ask a lot of things about you, and they want you to become who they want you to be. So if you're not clear about who you are, what you believe in, and your true identity, you will start adapt to people really fast, like we do when we're insecure. Oh my God, going on a date. Oh, he wants me to have green hair. No, brown hair. No, blonde. Like, you know, and you just, like, start because you want to be liked. And that's how a lot of companies do. They just, like, shift and do things because they want to be liked by customers. So always start from who you are, what you believe in, and your true identity first, before you're ready to go out dating,
Oh, I
also known
love
as
that.
getting customers.
Oh, I love it so much. That's so true. Because if you want to have a long-term vision, you absolutely need to set up the foundation in the beginning to be able to build on that identity that you're creating based on what you want to do in the world.
Yeah, exactly. So now when we know ourselves, and hopefully also like a true self, you know, and I love Brené Brown. And when she talks about vulnerability, this is so, but we can really use this for even really big corporates, because vulnerability is the foundation for how to build connections. And it's also the foundation for creativity and for innovation. And all brands and big companies want to be innovative and creative, and they want to connect with their audience. So it's not just us as personal brands who needs to be vulnerable and share our stories and talk about things that might be seen as a weakness. I encourage all companies to do that, because this is why they're so freaking boring, because they sound to be, they try to be so perfect all the time.
Yes.
So what if they could just show up a little bit more, what we call humanize the brand, more real and authentic, and actually like, hey, this is us. We're not perfect, you know, but this is what we do to take our responsibility. And when you're not so perfect, people connect easier. So that's kind of a little bit my mission too, to encourage companies to be a little bit more brave, to be imperfect.
Ooh, I love that. I love it.
So, yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
No, so that's kind of where we start. We start with ourselves, then we turn out to like, we, so we know who we talk to. And this is so important, because we can't do execution unless we know the people we talk to. So we need to understand really, like, how can we decide about a smaller part of the market that we talk to? And Seth Godin talks about split the market. So he talks about minimal viable audience. So it's like, how can we make sure that the budget we have, and a lot of people work with smaller clients, you know, most clients are small clients. So they don't have so much money. So if you don't have so much money, and not so many people working with it, you need to be very resourceful with what you have. And the best way to marketing yourself is to have a smaller group of people, so you can make sure that you create brand awareness in that group before you start to go wider.
Right.
So that's why you always say you have to niche down. It's not because you have to be boring and choose. It's because you need to be resourceful in your marketing.
Right. Yes.
So we do that, and then we get to know people, you know, by doing research. So this is where I know that I am a little bit different from some other strategists, because there's something like my friend Christine Lucer, who I'm going to do a course with soon. She told me this thing called impression management. And I always talked about brand perception, but it's a little bit two different things. So impression management, it's what it sounds like. You kind of try as management, you try to influence how people will see you and the first impression they get from you. So we need to know people's perception about the brand. So we do everything we can to make the right impression in all channels and touch points we can. And then we need to somehow figure out what their perceptions are, because we have our identity, how we want to be perceived, and then we have their perception of us, and this is the gap.
Right.
So there will be a gap that we need to close that or bridge that gap, and that's what we do then when we do the creative solution.
Right.
So that's why we need to know it.
Right.
And then we need to know how we kind of, who we're up against, you know?
Yes.
We want
yes.
to eliminate or minimize competition.
Yes.
Yeah, to have a really clear value proposition, a clear positioning, so we're ready to kind of go to war and win over our competitors. So it's like a war, a friendly war, but it's a war about like people's hearts and minds. That's what we do. So if we don't have this foundation and like a plan for attack, like how are we going to go from A to B? How are we going to bridge the gaps? That is really difficult to do execution.
Yes.
So that's why it's so important to start with strategy first.
Okay. So I have a couple questions. That was a lot of information.
Yeah.
If you are beginning to tell your story and decide who you want to date, and you don't want to date everybody, and you want to be selective, are there certain types of stories that you tell, and are the stories different at different places in the strategy?
For me, the stories is not like in the strategy. Like everything I just told you now, it's the strategy for me. It's a platform for the brand, and then it's the strategy how we're going to go from A to B. So that's the strategy. But after that, that's when the execution will come out as brand identity design, websites, advertising, storytelling, a lot of different things. So then we can choose in the storytelling, like, okay, so what kind of stories do we want to tell to what kind of people? Because it could be one story for journalists, for example, could be one story for customers, could be another story for other stakeholders. Like if you want investors, they always want to hear the story about the founder and the vision, like where you're going. They don't care so much about the now. They want to know where you're going. Do we believe in this person?
Yes. Yes. I think that's super important to be able to have that connection. And it's sort of like on the hero's journey where you're rooting for the person to overcome the obstacle and become this amazing, successful entity. And I think we always root for those people. That's what we're interested in. We're not interested in perfect. We're interested in the struggle, like you were saying earlier.
Yeah.
So if you're a brand and you're looking to become more vulnerable or more authentic, what advice would you give?
I would give the same advice as a personal brand. Get to know yourself. So how do you know that? How do you get to know a company? Because you can't, if there are 500 people, you can't get to know everyone, but you can get to know the culture. So what I do, especially when I work with bigger clients, is that you need to spend at least, I would say like 50% of my time at least, is spent with the people in the company. Because a lot of people forget about that. They just think it's about the customer and things for them.
Right.
But for a lot of companies, especially business to business, it's actually about finding the right people will work for the company too. That's also why we build a brand. So you have to spend a lot of time with people to really understand the culture. And the culture is nothing that you can't just change. The culture is also set by the leadership.
Right.
So everything comes back. That's why the CEO always have to be the one that owns the brand strategy and to understand how important it is to build a brand and the culture. Because if they're really bad leadership, culture will be bad. The brand will be bad.
Yes. That is very true. Toxic workplace culture is a big thing. And it's a real thing.
It is.
It is. So you're also a one-on-one coach. And you have a boot camp, and you're someone who has a lot of experience working with some of the biggest brands in the world. If you had to sum everything all up, what is the biggest piece of advice you have to offer business owners seeking to level up their brand strategies?
Business owners or creatives? Business owners.
Business owners.
Yeah. I would actually go back to the thing we just talked about, to have a little courage and to not be so afraid and think about the brand the way we see personal brands. Like, we really don't like people who like know it all, who pretend that they're perfect, because it's so obvious sometimes that people are really insecure. And I think it's the same thing with companies and brands.
Interesting.
So I just try to help them to become a little bit more brave. I have this expression of, I don't put lipstick on pigs. And I tell them, like, are you a pig? I don't put lipstick on pigs. And then we laugh. But it's not just entirely a joke. It's actually a little bit truth, because I think you do first and then you talk about it. especially because I have been very focused on sustainability, it's really important that you actually do the work first and then you talk about it, because you need to live the brand. You know, we talk about walk the talk.
Right.
It's really important. So I tell them that, you know, instead of trying to be perfect, I don't want you to use any people who work for you or any creative people to help you greenwash or purpose wash. That's not what I'm doing. So I want to make sure that I know that you're doing the work that we're actually going to communicate first. So honesty, transparency, and being very honest about where you're at on your journey. I think it's much better to say, we really suck at this and this and this, but we take responsibility for that. And here's the plan of action that we're doing right now. And if you talk like that, it's like normal people. People will much more connect to that brand.
Right. Agreed.
So I'm kind of I'm not owned by anyone. I'm kind of fearless when it comes to things like that. And I just encourage them to find their true self and their culture and to tell their real stories so they could be human, imperfect, and connect with people on a real deeper level. That's what I do.
It's beautiful, Annalie. I love that so much. Two questions. One, can you define what greenwashing is for people who might not know? And then the second question is, what drew you to working in sustainability in the first place?
Yeah. I mean, greenwashing for me, I also call purpose washing. It's when you don't really do something and you just kind of pretend that you're doing good, or you choose something that is actually not that important. Like if you have a really big negative impact somehow, that's what you need to take responsibility for, not do some little thing, you know, that looks good, kind of a gimmick, and then you talk about that in your advertising.
Right.
It's like Coca-Cola, for example. Like they're doing so, I mean, they have a crap product. Like just, you know, if they really want to do something, stop selling Coca-Cola. It's like poison. So they can do it, everything they want, and I still will feel it's a greenwash.
Right. So it's basically you're doing something that is harmful in some way, but you're acting like you're a great green product or you're healthy. It's the opposite.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I was in a product. I'm not proud of this. And I can't tell who they are because they will sue me. But it was a big, big, big company. And they're selling food. So they have plastic bags. And we did a big project where they raised the price for plastic bags because we have this tax in Europe for plastic bags. So they raised the price. So then they were like, okay, so then we can give... There were a lot of people, a lot of money, like $1 million or something in a project. And I was responsible for that project for 9 months. So we got all this money. We found really good projects that were really good, sustainable projects that got this money. But I didn't feel good about that because I was thinking all the time, why the hell do they still sell plastic bags? Just stop doing it.
Yep.
You know, that's greenwashing for me. To like, okay, let's raise the price a little bit. Continue to sell them. They still sell as much. And then you take the money and give it somewhere so it's going to look good.
Right.
And I was kind of in the middle of the project. I was really loyal. But now after, I'm like, okay, I'm not doing that again.
Wow. Wow, that's commitment. That's impressive. Annalie, I know a lot of people would just take the money and turn a blind eye. So that's really, really, really impressive. So just to go back. So what drew you to sustainability? I know where you live, it's kind of, it's more common than in the United States. I would love to hear your story.
Okay. So I'm born out at an island with just 500 people. So it's a bridge, but it's still an island. And it was 30 people in my school when I was a kid. So I feel I were almost like Amish people. I'm not saying it as a joke, but it's like, I didn't know anything else. You know, my dad was like hunting, it was like fishing. We lived a very like life, you know, in nature and with nature. And it was just really important for me my entire life. And my aunt and uncle, they were farmers, you know. So when I got the opportunity 2010, 11, I was really into, you know, when Simon Sinek, his book started with Why, I think it came out 2010, something like that. And I was like, oh my God, this is what I've always been talking about with mission. Like, this is my thing. And then I got the opportunity to work for this big company, Kolantmännen, in Sweden, which is owned by Swedish farmers. I'm like, oh my God, back to my roots, back to the roots, you know. And they were really, really focused on sustainability. So it was such an amazing time because almost for 5 years, I got to really like sit next to the sustainability department. And I was not just doing all the strategy and all the marketing and branding and everything. I was also part of the discussions of the sustainability report. How we're going to tell, you know, the stories about sustainability, how we develop products in a more sustainable way. So I learned a lot. And it was just like, after this, how can I ever go back and do something else? That's when I started thinking about the pig with the lipstick. And I'm like, that doesn't work for me. I don't put lipstick on pigs. So after that, I decided this is going to be what I want to help brands do. I felt like a little bit like even dirty, like working with advertising and marketing. I'm like, it doesn't feel good. Maybe I should do something else. Maybe I should become a teacher instead. So I was really into maybe becoming a teacher instead, like my sister. But then I was like, if I can use my powers for good, that could actually be a really good thing. So that's how I started my focus on sustainability. And now I've got to teach about it and become I became a teacher too. So it's kind of interesting. That's how it started.
And can you tell everybody where you're teaching right now while we're on this topic?
Yeah, so I'm teaching brand strategy. So basically what I didn't realize when I started to teach brand strategy was that a lot of designers and creatives don't have a marketing strategy background, and that's my background. So when I can teach brand strategy from a perspective, which 80% of my frameworks and what I teach is marketing strategy. So basically you get like an education in branding and marketing strategy and design thinking, because that's how I combine everything. So that is what I teach with a focus on creatives, because I want every creative to have a seat at the C-suite table. So
Love
that's the
that.
executive table. And the reason why you want to be there, it's because that's when all the big decisions is made. Like, you don't want to be the order taker just doing the things. You want to be there and actually use your amazing creative mind and ideas and solve the really big problems. So it's like my big mission to have at least one creative at every executive table.
Oh, I love that so much, Annalie. It's so wonderful to be included like that and not just be an order taker. Okay, so I'm going to shift gears just a little bit. This is Women's History Month, and all of our guests this month are females. And I was wondering if you find that there are specific challenges female strategists face in the workplace and in leadership roles, and what you see as what you perceive as being different in the different roles.
I think it's been, I mean, and I live in Sweden, so we need to remember that it's like the most equal country in the world, probably, you know. So I would, it's so difficult when I get questions like this, because I'm a blonde woman living in a country where I have nothing to complain about. You know, so it's almost difficult for me to even say something without, I'm afraid of sounding like, what's your problem? And it's true. I don't have so much problem at all. But if I would say anything about being a woman, in this industry. I don't think it's just in this industry. I think it's being a woman in any industry. And I don't even know where the problem is, but I thought about a few things that I reflect on. And one is, I don't know if that is how we're like wired from childhood, but it's something around that much more women I meet question themselves and have suffer more from imposter syndrome and wonder if they really are worthy, if they can do it. Like, you know, do I know enough? If there any chance to get a new position or to do something, it's like, I don't know if I know 100% of this. While a lot of men are like, hey, I know 60%, who cares? I go for it, you know? I feel that is a big difference.
Yes.
And I don't know why, if it's something that happens when we're younger, if we have a different pressure. I don't know what it is, but it is a difference.
Yes, it is different. I agree with you.
Yeah, so that's one thing that I really thought about. And then another thing that I think is kind of hilarious in a way, because I never peaked. Like, okay, so I always wonder, how come women are always too young and then we're too old? It's like, when the hell did I peak? Because I used to be so young for so long, and people like, oh, you're the same age as my daughter.
Right.
I'm like, okay. And then one day I was like, do you know about social media, or are you too old?
I'm like, my God.
What happened? You know,
yeah.
I'm like,
yeah.
I still wait for my peak, but I think I'm on my way, you know.
Oh, no, no. I don't agree with that at all. No.
No, but it's kind of hilarious, because I met men when I was working in the corporate environment, who they're so funny because they dress up like they go to their job, and like 25 in a suit. And then you meet them and they're like, yeah, I'm the senior consultant for this branding studio. I'm like, senior consultant? You just, you know, finished school. But they say it really serious.
Yeah.
And then they can show up like that, and then they can be 85 and no one cares.
Right. Yeah.
And I think it's been getting better, because I think I see more women that are a little bit older, even on social media. But I do think it's easier for men in a way that to start really young and never being really questioned about their age.
I agree.
I think that's been a thing that I really reflect on. And one more thing. We're born, I think, to be focused on relationships. From we're really small. It's, you know, when you study kids, they're like if you and I were kids, if our friends when we were small, we're like, hey Heather, do you want to play after school? You're like, yeah, and someone's like, what are you going to do? And we're like, we don't care. We're just going to have fun. Because we want to hang out with each other. While men are often a little bit more focused on the thing, like the task they're going to do, the activity. So like, I'm going to play football. Who's going to play football?
Yeah.
And they don't really care as long as they can play football. So I thought about that when we come out in the business life. Of course, that will affect us too, because men are more like, here's the task and I'm going to do it.
Right.
And as women want to have the relationship and getting along and, like, you know, can be sensitive to energy and just having this good relationship. And that might be something why not everyone wants to have a more leading position, because it's lonely on the top. Like, you know, you get more and more lonely the higher up you get.
Yes.
So if you do that, you also say that you're basically don't need that relationships.
Interesting. I never thought about that, Annalie. That's really, really interesting. And you know that when you go after something you want, and women will fall back if they feel like they're not 100% qualified. I actually did it yesterday and I caught myself and I thought, wait, stop. You're doing the thing. But it's so embedded. It's so unconscious. It's something I've learned. And then I have to be aware of unlearning all this stuff. And it's just a constant struggle. It really, it's a constant struggle. So have you, as moving into these leadership roles and running a boot camp and taking on, you've been accelerating the number of things that you take on and being more visible in the world. What process are you personally involved with as far as unlearning those habits or behaviors so that you can move forward in your life the way you want in your career?
I mean, when it comes to my whole journey with my personal brand has been the most game-changing thing for me my entire life. And I'm 50. So I would say the 2-3 last years, especially maybe the 2 years have been really, oh my God, it's like, it's been tough, but also this is why I want to help people. When I figured everything out, I want to help people. I feel like I want to heal first. But I can help companies right now and I can educate about it, but I don't want to help people on a one-on-one level because I'm not there yet. I'm like in the middle of it. I do struggle. I still have a lot of things that I have to really battle every day. And one thing that you said too is really like, and you know, when you say it, I'm like, oh my God, Heather, you're like, you're so qualified. You're so amazing. You're such a talented designer. I just want to like, how could you ever doubt yourself? You know, it's easy to say from the outside. And I know how it feels like. So I'm doing that too. Just yesterday, I was reflecting on something. I'm like, oh my God, I've actually been, if I count the years that I've also been in sales, the first 3 years, because I was still actually in startups and help grow a business and a brand, even though it was sales. But if I would count that, it would be 30 years in the industry. So it's many years. And still, like you, I'm sometimes a, am I good enough to do this? Do I know enough? And then I see some random people who just read a few books and they're like preaching. I'm like, Annalie, you know your stuff.
Right.
Stop this, you know, just go out there and do your thing. So I think it's, but for me, it's important to talk about it too, because I think a lot of people think she has everything figured out, you know, she's that age, things are going well, and they're going well. But I also have this inner kind of demons that I have to fight and overcome things. So it's like, it's therapy. It's having a great coach and my friend in Christo, and he's been amazing. I wouldn't even be here if it wasn't for him. And I don't mean in a way that he helped me, I couldn't do it myself, but in a way that I've been going so deep in my personal development and feel so strong right now that I can do anything. But I can also talk about anything. So I can share all my struggles and not feel shame about it anymore. And if I feel a little shame, I just tell people about it. It's amazing to come to a place like that. I never thought I was going to be so brave that I could talk about things like that in front of people. And so you have no idea how many people reaching out to me, especially really high executive managers, like leader level, authors, people who are really successful, they are the ones reaching out to me and say, oh, I wish I had the guts to do that, to share things that you do on social media. They're really impressed. The people who are more insecure, they're like, don't do it, you ruined your business. But I'm like, relax. I don't.
Oh my God, Annalie. Okay, so I'm going to loop back around one more time into brand strategy for just a second. And then we're going to open it up for questions for the audience. So if you have questions, please drop them in the chat while Annalie and I wrap up the last phase of this interview. So a few years ago, for those people who don't know this about you, you had never worked in the United States. You were looking to grow and be comfortable with being in the spotlight more and move into teaching, and more into teaching and less into being a brand strategist, even though the teaching is brand strategy. Can you talk about how you made that change? I think a lot of people get stuck in, I've done this for so long, I've been so involved. Is it too late for me to change or to grow? Can I do more? And I know for you, you had your own specific struggles around this. So I would love for you to talk about this.
How I started to teach, is that what you mean?
Yes. Or what made you think that you could do more and you didn't have to stay where you were at?
Okay. So since about 2014, maybe, I was teaching in a project for, but a really small class, but it was almost kind of a combination of strategy, teaching, coaching. So we had up to 10 companies every semester. So it was a project for European Union to help really like organic, sustainable small companies to level up their business. So I had this, I was responsible for a program, it was a little bit like brand strategy, marketing strategy. So I did that for many years. And I was like, oh, this is so much fun. It's so much fun to teach. But I also love doing client work. I didn't think about it so much. 2019, I joined the Future Pro Group, where you and I, or did we meet there? Anyway, I don't even remember.
It was
Clubhouse.
Clubhouse. Yeah.
So I joined the Future Pro Group. And really soon, first I didn't want to speak English in front of people. So that was my first like really big challenge. Mm-hmm. Like I see Van here. She was one of the super kind persons who really like helped me. A lot of people helped me one-on-one and in really small groups to help me get started because I had to use Google Translate. It was really tough. So it took some month, but then after about 6 months, I actually started like a subgroup in the group. And I started to teach people because I just wanted to give back. So I had no idea that I was going to teach. I was like, this is so much fun, but I still do client work. And then during the pandemic, I lost 70% of my clients in like 2 weeks. I'm like, oh my God, I need to do something. So I took 6 months off just to find myself, to find what I want to do in my life and just like, you know, I don't have kids, so I didn't have that time at home, you know, between. So my husband is like, take that time. It's great. So I got coaching a lot of things. And I decided I'm going to turn into coaching and teaching instead. It would be amazing if the last one third of my life, maybe I could spend that on actually giving back and help people, especially people like me, who's actually not the perfect A student. I wasn't really popular in school from the teacher perspective either. Like I was kind of a rebel and I didn't like being in school. You know, it doesn't really wasn't my thing. So people like me who basically need to learn by themselves or find other ways of going to school when they're older. I was like, there are a lot of analysts out there who might need a little help that is not that perfect A students with a lot of money, you know, they don't need help. They can go to expensive schools. So that's what I felt like, you know, I just want to help people from all around the world. So I started to teach. And so it was kind of an accident that I did a couple of workshops for the future and they sold out and they become a really big success. And we decided that I was going to do a course. And that was freaking the most scary things I ever done because I didn't like, I don't know how to speak English. I don't know anything about tech. And here I am going to record myself teaching for the very first time in front of a camera. Super scary. But that course, it's a crazy launch, a six-figure launch. That was the best launch they ever had at the future then.
Wow.
And that just opened the door for, oh, I'm on an international market and I can teach. And here I am 3 years later, 2 years later. And it's amazing. So now I'm just wish I'm practicing becoming a better and better teacher so I can reach more and more people. And that's my calling. That's the only thing I want to do. So the back to the client work is like, I do a little client work to keep myself updated. I don't have to do so much because I'm actually bringing in client in my teaching all the time. And that's my unique teaching style. So I see myself as a street strategist, and a street strategist is not an academic. So I bring in my client into the classroom and we do work together. So I want the students to know how it feels like to facilitate with a real client. So that's how I teach. That's why I stay, like, you know, I meet clients all the time anyway, and I do client work.
Wow. Annalie, you're amazing. I have so much respect for you. I have some questions coming in, so I'm going to start the Q&A. So we have... Devron would like to know, what are some potential pitfalls or blind spots that creatives should be mindful of when executing their visions?
Can we ask a question back, or maybe that it's not possible?
Go ahead.
I would just want to, when you say vision, I wonder if you mean to execute this on strategy, the strategy approach. I guess that is what
yes,
he means.
Yes, I think that's what he means.
Yes. So what we're going to be careful about. Okay, so one thing that is really important that I think, but it goes both ways. Okay, let me see what he's right. Things we don't normally consider. So I think it goes both ways. A lot of strategists can't keep their fingers from creative ideas. And a lot of creatives want to change the strategy. Like, no, don't. Okay. So we need to, you know, like we do a web, it's easier to think about it. Like when you do a website, you know exactly when you kind of need to have a scope of work. And you know what happens every time. The client just want more and more and more and more. It's like at one point you need to be like, stop. Like, are we deciding about these things now? We make a decision and then we continue. We can't go, it's not, you're not allowed to go back again and change things. Like, you come to a point where you need to make a decision and then you continue.
Right.
It's the same thing with the brand strategy. Like, you need to decide about those things because you do research and you go really deep in facilitation with the client and then you make a decision. And the decision for positioning, for example, it's not the rest of the world. It might even change in a year because position is here and now.
Yes.
Yeah. So when we decided that, the creatives need to be aware that we have now, our job is to take this strategy that's here. There's a problem. There's some insights that we actually have. And we are going to solve this. So we are going to do the how to solve the problem. And the strategists are saying, this is the problem to solve.
Right.
So the strategist sends a brief to the creative agency. The creative agency sends a brief back called creative brief. This is where people get lost. So when strategists start to send creative briefs to the creative, they already have a problem. So they need to realize they are defining the problem and the insights, sending it to creative team. They're sending back, this is how we're going to solve it. But make sure you're actually solving the right problem.
Right.
And not coming up with your own thing when the ego kicks in and you want to do something you can get an award for or something you think look great or is fun yourself. It's like, no. We have a job to do here. We have a problem to solve.
Yes.
So that's the most common thing is to ignore the brief.
Yes.
And to let your ego go wild.
Yes, I agree. and then he also asks, what advice do you have in terms of maintaining confidence and being willing to readjust for creatives who envision something, plan, execute, and still fail? So how do you keep your confidence going even if you're failing?
I don't think there's a failing. I don't understand that failing. What does that mean to fail? I don't understand. I mean, what is, I'm serious. What is the failing? Because if we do things and we try out things, I always test it. So you can't fail.
Interesting.
I just see it as a prototype. I prototype an idea. I test it. There's no judgment in that. If it works or not, then you just do another thing. It has nothing to do with you. It's just an idea.
Right. Oh, you just nailed that, the judgment that comes when you don't execute in the way that you think you should be executing. Mm-hmm. You're right, 100% right. Take yourself out of the equation. Agreed. Yeah. Let's see. And then we have Liesl says, I'm in my 50s. The zero shits I give, as I call them, the given years. There's quite a lot of talk in Europe about naming and shaming, greenwashing and purpose, hypocritical businesses. I hear it from people my age with little to lose as we're so independent. What are mm-hmm. your thoughts on this as an effective way to move or dial or ethic or move the dial for ethnically questionable, that's a mouthful, behavior? Yeah.
Okay. I always think it's difficult when I get a question like this, especially yes. when I don't see people, because I can't like see, if I say something, I can see someone is nodding. Even if they can't talk, you can see like they're nodding, like, okay, I'm on my right. Also, I kind of like to ask a couple of questions back, so I actually make sure that I'm answering the right question. But okay. I think what she means, and my reflection on this is, first, I was like, you know, maybe it's really good to call people out and mm-hmm. to be super honest and to do mm-hmm. that.
Mm-hmm.
But then I realized I don't think it's my style, because you also need to, at some point, you need to make a decision if you want to be that person judging other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want that. Like, mm-hmm. I really don't. So what I'm trying to do instead is like, I have a list of people that I would never work with. And it's basically the same list as I was 20. You know, my first job as a PR agency, we got to write a list. This, we're not working with this. It was totally okay. I had a lot of things on my list that I didn't want to work with, and they respected that. So I have a lot of things that I don't want to work with. But then I have companies that I actually think I can do and help in ways. So instead of just saying that, I mean, if Coca-Cola called me and they said, we don't want to sell Coca-Cola anymore, which would never happen, but if they would, I would be happy to help them with a project, how to take their brand into a product that is actually healthy for people. I wouldn't say no because it's Coca-Cola. Mm-hmm. I love IKEA, for example, and I have some discussions with some friends about that. Who doesn't like fast, like interior design. But I happen to know a lot about IKEA sustainability work too. But I think for me, it's more about finding the opportunity to see something that I can help change,
mm-hmm.
go in and maybe do a project to nudge a new behavior, or to change something. For IKEA, for example, I was there having lunch. I'm like, okay, they're really bad at nudging people in a vegetarian direction for food, like for lunch. I took a couple of pictures. My husband's like, what are you doing now? I'm like, just taking some pictures. He's like, are you going to reach out to IKEA? I'm like, you bet. You bet I am. Because then I can reach out to them and I can say, I have an idea how you can nudge your behavior when you sell your food, because I happen to know that you want to sell more vegetarian food. Let's do a project together. That's how I think, that's how I want to approach things. Then I can bring in, you know, students, and we can do a fun project instead of like, just like naming people and calling them out and just complaining and judging without doing anything. It's not my style.
Thank you. Liesl, I hope that answers your question. If you have more questions, drop it in the chat, unless you're muted.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Liesl.
Thank you.
I've got a question here from our friend Brian.
And, hi, Brian.
Hi, Brian. with the quite accomplished career, where would you like to be in 10 years? And what would you like to be your next big accomplishment?
Wow. I love that question. My next big accomplishment is still, which I've been saying for a couple of years now, and it hasn't happened yet. I am going to do a keynote presentation one day at Adobe Max.
Woo.
That is one of my goals. I also have a goal of teaching 1 million creatives brand strategy. Not because I think that designers and creatives need to become brand strategists, but I do think, because my mission is to help all of you to a seat, all of you want that, to have that seat at the C-suite table. So to learn brand strategy and to know how to develop a brand is a really good thing to know. And then you can still be a creative too. So you can do both things. So to teach 1 million creatives is my goal. So in order to do that, I need to scale my business and reach out to more people. So I just want to be a better teacher and a better content creator.
Mm-hmm.
But I do what I love. I really do what I love. And if I could choose, I would love to go somewhere at least 4 times a year to do public speaking and live workshops, because I love live teaching.
And you're good at it.
Thank you.
Yes. And you also ask, if you could go back and give your younger self some advice, what would you tell her to do differently?
I would say to her that you will probably never be a person who don't give an F about what people say about you and think about you. And that's okay, because that's you.
Mm-hmm.
But don't let that define who you are, and don't let them quiet you, and do whatever you want. But you can still be you. Because I think that's so important. I try to kind of fix myself and to change myself a lot. And I am who I am. But the more confident you get and more acceptive of all parts of yourself, it's like almost at a point where I told so many things that there are no secrets to hide, you know, and that also gives a confidence. So I'd be like, just share everything, because if people don't like you, do you really want to be around them anyway?
Right.
You know, I've been so good at adjusting to people, such a people pleaser. So I would say, you're just good the way you are. You know, there are people who will like you too, and you don't have to be friends with everyone.
Great advice. Oh my God, that's so good. That's so important. And Devron also is asking if there are things that we don't normally consider when it comes to planning and execution. You know, are there things that we should just focus on or things we should forget?
I think one thing that is super important is that the devil is in the details, is one thing, in every detail. I mean, I've been doing a lot of commercials, like TV commercials. And when you do that, and it's like, why? What is she doing here? Like, involved in everything, like in from storyboarding to clothes, everything, you know? I'm like, it's not because I don't let you do your job, but I want to make sure that it's on brand. And I know the brand. I know the soul. And I can see the details. I'm like, that was a hat from the wrong, you know.
Yeah,
if you do something for Volvo, you can't like have John Deere coming up with a hat there. It's like, you have to pay attention to everything. I'm like, I see a green machine over there. That's not a Volvo, you know. And people don't see that often when they work for agencies. So make sure that all the details are so important for the client. It really is. So the devil is in the details. Also, make sure that, especially when it comes to branding, that implementation is so important when it comes to internally in the companies. So when you work with branding, you need to make sure that you have a lot of time to educate people and to make sure that they know how to behave and they know how to make decisions. So you can have different scenarios, for example, what would be on brand and not? Because branding is not just how you look, it's how you talk, it's how you behave, it's how you show up. That must be from the culture, from the company culture. So spend a lot of time in execution, implementation, and really, make sure that people leave the brand. So that's also one thing. And then another thing is when you think, oh my God, I'm so freaking tired of this. I don't want to see one more thing. We need a new idea. That is like, no, you don't need a new idea. This is the moment when people start paying attention. When you're so tired that you can't stand it, that's when other people, because people have so much noise and so much things going on, they're not that interested in your brand. So we need to know that consistency is so important. So stay with one concept for a really long time and don't change so many things. And if you have a concept and a story, for example, for a brand marketing, you need to do that in so many different touch points at the same time, so people will even notice. So I think that's a thing too. Like, don't get bored of your own things because you're not the best judge of that.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So we are now at 103. So I'm going to get ready to wrap this up. If anyone has any last lingering questions, now is the time to ask. And Annalie, while I'm waiting to see if any more questions show up, can you talk about any projects you have going on, things coming up in the future, where people can find you, and
Yeah.
anything else we can help promote?
Thank you. On the topic that we were talking about, one thing that I've been thinking about a long time is how can I be a better teacher, like I said. And one of my mentors, I can say, and a person that I got really influenced by is a professor, Christine Lucer, and she's amazing. And I learned a lot from her. So I asked her if she wanted to do a course with me in brand strategy because she also teach brand strategy. So this is where the professor meets the street strategist. It's going to be, and I'm not humble when it comes to this because I think we're actually going to create the best course out there. She is a behavior science and she is an academic. And I'm just really good at doing the work. So I think the combination of the two of us, she knows how people, the behavior, how people think and how people act and why they do, how we can nudge behavior. We're going to talk about how we can build brands as a catalyst for change. So we're talking about high level sustainability and change making. So this is where we drop the frameworks because I always follow frameworks. That's how you need to learn things from start. It's like with design, you need to learn it first and then you can break the rules. I teach people first. Now it's time to break the rules. So we're going to drop the frameworks, being really good at diagnosing problems by asking really good questions, critical thinking, system thinking, and we're going deep. So it's going to be about 10 weeks and we start in April, and I'm super excited about that project.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's going to be intense.
Yeah.
So if people wanted to learn more, where can they find it?
They can find me at the Annelie Hansen, Anneli Hansen, 2 S. And I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Instagram, most everywhere, like you, Heather,
Yes.
but I'm most active at LinkedIn and Instagram.
Okay. Well, any closing comments, Annalie? It has been my absolute pleasure to speak with you. It's been a while. I love seeing your
Yeah.
face.
You know, Heather, I wish, I mean, you could be the first person in a call like this because I think you are amazing. And I really want to acknowledge that we have known each other for a couple of years and we talked about my journey now, but I want to do a call about your journey because to see you, I mean, I know how extremely talented you are and how much you really invested in helping other people, conferences and other things, connecting people. But to see you really finding your voice and being more visible and do things like this and workshops and stuff, it's such a pleasure to see your growth. So yeah, that's my closing thoughts. Heather Crank,
Jeez.
you are my idol.
Oh my God. Thank you, Annalie. All right, everybody. Well, a huge warm thank you to Annalie for joining us for this hour podcast. Please reach out to her for her upcoming courses in April. And if you would like to know more about strategy, if you would like to know more about going deep and breaking the rules, if you're a strategist that's looking to move to the next phase of your career, please check out Annalie's new class. Thank you so much for everybody and have a wonderful week. Thank you, Annalie.
Oh, thank you everyone for being here. I see so many familiar faces.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.